Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington. It's Election Day, and brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong, and that is what Election Day is all about. I was just pulling up some numbers. And I want to go through some things in depth for Election Day at the end of the briefing today. But these are the days. Election Day is the days that we actually do the work to implement freedom, where our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. But we want to get the guidance of the Holy Spirit in who to vote for. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. Action being voting. Exodus 15:3 says, "The Lord is a warrior, the Lord is his name." We can be a warrior in the ballot box. Do we think about it that way? Sometimes I don't believe that people have that picture in their minds, and yet it impacts every area of our lives, more so than war does. Okay? Politics is always around. It will always be around. And you may not be interested in it, but it is interested in you. And if you have not sent your ballot in today, there's no excuse. Get down and mail your ballot now. Drop it at one of the voting boxes that you can take a look at where they're located on the county assessor, the county auditor website on the elections page. You can find out where those drop boxes are in your county. But vote. It makes a difference. Spokane Valley, the difference, you know, whether we're going to become socialist city of Spokane or we're going to remain the capital of Free Washington. That's what's at stake. And I'm going to get to that here in a little bit with some numbers that nobody else in the media has, okay, folks? Talking about some of the things that are going on around the country that I think you'll find fascinating. At least I find it fascinating. So much happening right now, and you know, we cannot sit on our laurels. We cannot think that, well, everything's going to be okay, and I don't need to vote. Somebody else will do that. Doesn't make a difference. Yes, it does make a difference. In fact, if we're going to live out our calling in Jesus Christ, we must live out our Christianity beyond the four walls of the church in every area of our lives, and that includes being part of the process here in America. Being part of our republic and voting for people who are going to stand by the ideas, the values, the beliefs, the cultures, the traditions that have made this country great, that have faith in Jesus Christ, that have a clear understanding of the Constitution and the will to defend it at all levels of government. It was so funny. Somebody said regarding the Spokane Valley City Council, "You guys shouldn't be worried about the Constitution." Whoa, time out. What? Every person that's in elected office takes an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Washington State Constitution. And oh, by the way, do you know where that comes from? It actually comes from the U.S. Constitution. It's actually a requirement. So, you've taken an oath, a promise, so yes, the Constitution matters at all levels. In fact, I would say the people that make that ridiculous comment of, oh, you guys shouldn't be worried so much about the Constitution at the local level, are the exact reason we're in the place we're in today, where the Constitution's been ignored at all levels. People don't know what's going on. And you have serious, serious long-term problems. From the economy to just privacy, that are not going to be easy to unwind, that have resulted because people have said, hey, you guys at the local level, don't worry about the Constitution. What are you worried about the Constitution for? That's exactly who we want to vote for, people that are worried about the Constitution. And that brings us today to your daily intelligence briefing. On the international front, is coming to us from Deb Kafile. The Middle East is preparing for war. You heard that right. Now, we've been talking the last couple of weeks about the shift where the Iraqi army has taken the oil fields around Kirkuk, but the Kurds have taken the oil fields in Syria. Now, interesting, over the weekend, a dramatic shakeup. Now, many of you probably saw the Saudi shakeup with the arrest and detainment and the freezing of funds of a good portion of the royal family that does not believe in the more moderate direction of the current crown prince. And that really overshadowed a couple of other events that I want to put this all into context for you, because the leadership shakeup happening in the Saudi Arabian royal family, many people are speculating, is happening in their preparation, not just for a war, but greater integration into the globalist community. Okay? Now, the New American Magazine predicted this years ago, so I want to, you know, this is another thing that appears to be headed in the direction the New American Magazine talked about, that there would be a consolidation in the Middle East to become part of a global entity. But first, something that got overshadowed was the fact that Yemeni Houthi rebels launched a missile over Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, that was shot down by Patriot missile battery. Okay. The Saudi foreign minister told the Iranians that that was an act of war. Now, that is not, I haven't seen that reported widely. This is on Deb. You can take a look at it for yourselves. But also, that got overshadowed was a sudden reshuffle in Iran's top army and naval commands. You have now the two major players in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia and Iran, having major reshuffles. And you also have Turkey kind of sitting over there on the side, not to be dismissed. But these two major players, and then you have this missile shot at Riyadh. The Ayatollah Ali Khamenei had secretly ordered this reshuffle in the high commands of the Iranian army and navy. And the supposition is that they are doing that also in preparation for war. So we're going to keep our eyes on this, but these are some dramatic happenings right now in the Middle East. And when you see major leadership changes like this, something is about to happen. Also on the international front, Trump is in North Korea along with three aircraft carriers. And I'm going to tell you something as well. I have been getting reports over the last day and a half that there has been a significant amount of activity at the North Korean testing site. Also, that they may try to test some more missiles again. So things are kind of on edge over there right now. And the media, the mainstream media, just doesn't like talking about a lot of this stuff because they think it scares people. Well, people deserve the truth. And the truth is that the North Koreans may try to do something while Trump is over there. We'll see. We'll see. We'll keep following it as well. All right. Also on the international front, Venezuela is trying to restructure its debt to avoid default. Remember, we talked about this first five missed payments. Now, they have a 30-day grace period, but they missed those five payments on the actual due date. So they're now in late status. And then they made a payment of over $800 that next Thursday. And they had another payment due this last Friday. And what has come out from that is that they are going to restructure their debt to avoid default. Well, they're already in default if they can't make these two payments. The first of five, the first set, I should say, of five, and then this last one on Friday. So you have a lot of investors, a lot of people that watch the market saying that it looks like that Venezuela can't pay it and will go into default. Now, this is an oil nation. And it's $89 billion worth of debt is what it needs to restructure. We understand what we're talking about. This country can't pay its debts in modern times, has 2,400% inflation, and now has said, well, we made one payment out of six, I guess. We need to restructure the rest of it. And while they're kind of staying afloat by making the first, many people are, again, asking the question, where's the rest of the money going to come from? So I was getting in a little bit of a Facebook argument over the weekend with somebody who was defending socialism because they said, oh, this isn't true socialism. You know, it's always what the socialists say. They always say they just didn't do that socialism right. Now, they confuse socialism and they think it's a political system. Now, I want to be really clear on how we define our terms. Because they said in true socialism they would actually have a group of people that wouldn't listen to other people's opinions and on and on. Socialism is not a political system. It's an economic system. Oligarchy, or the rule of a few, is a political system. Monarchy, rule of one. Democracy, rule of the mob. Republic, rule of law. And anarchy, rule of none. Those are political systems. Economic systems are things like the free market, where capital, the means of production, is owned and controlled privately. Or fascism, which is an economic system, where the means of production is owned privately but controlled by the government. Socialism is an economic system where capital may be owned privately for the most part, always though it's controlled by the government, and the government will control and own a few key sectors. Oh, I don't know, for example, healthcare, maybe a car maker. You see where I'm going with this? Communism, probably the most honest, is the state owns and controls everything, okay? That is an economic system. And so people are missing this whole thing. And the socialism in Venezuela, the economic system, the ownership of some of the key sectors and the control of all sectors of the economy is what's led to the collapse down there. We got to be very clear on this, and it is a very clear lesson to all of us. Socialism always fails because it is a centralization of control over all the economic sectors and doesn't allow the economy to correct quickly through the thousands of individual transactions that correct the economy in a true free market. And we don't have a true free market here in America, folks. We don't. All right. Now that we know that, let's move to the national front and let's talk about some of the socialists here in America. The FBI had a field report. This was released as part of a book by Ed Klein that documents the ISIS collusion and Al-Qaeda collusion with leftist groups. They imply Antifa out of Oakland, California. They went to Germany, met with the German anti-fascists. And you know what? They aren't even anti-fascists. I got to figure out something to call them other, because they're not anti-fascist. They're actually fascist in what they do, in what they advocate. All right. Anyway, the FBI report showed collusion between these leftist groups in America and Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula and of the Maghreb, too. But the bottom line is this shows what I've been talking about a long time. It's called the green-red axis. And General Mihai Pachipa, in his book Disinformation, talks about the Soviets intentionally infiltrating the Muslim Brotherhood and Middle Eastern organizations to use the Middle East as a buffer against the United States. They talked about it. Okay, that's historic fact. So now everybody was on edge over the weekend that the leftist elements in the United States would begin some sort of revolution, communist revolution. But apparently the snowflakes were afraid of snowflakes and did not show up in mass. And it really petered out. But there was one very disturbing picture somebody sent me from the internet of a leftist-affiliated group that said on Saturday, something big is going to happen tomorrow in Texas, period. I'm going to follow up on this and figure out where this came from, who's behind it, what the authenticity is of it. But that was extremely alarming to see that picture out there. Also, on the national front, in Texas, there was this horrific massacre at a church, 26 dead, plus looks like a couple more may pass. An atheist behind this, somebody that hates Christians. And, you know, because we are on the anniversary of the communist revolution in Russia, I think it's important to talk about the low end of the spectrum is over 50 million killed by atheist communists. 50 million. Atheism and communism are the deadliest belief systems in the history of the world, and that is an unarguable fact. And now we have more Christians killed in Texas. And I have to say something to all the pastors, church members out there. And I've talked to people privately about this for years. You need to take your church security seriously. You know, they did in the colonial times. Indian raids were a fact of life. In fact, some pastors that have studied history relayed to me that one of the reasons the pastor went outside of the church first was to make sure that there wasn't an ambush waiting for his parishioners when they left the service. Also, I understand that in several colonial churches, they actually stacked guns in the aisle. Men sat on the inside pew. In other words, the pew on the outside of the pew, but in the inside part of the church so they could get to their rifles in case they were attacked. This isn't something new, is my point. This has happened to Christians throughout the ages. We have the ability to defend ourselves. We need to take the threat seriously. I don't think, unfortunately, this is going to be the last such incident like this. So we need to take our church security seriously. And yes, God protects us. He does. No question about it. But there are evil people in the world. And if we have the ability to defend ourselves, we need to do that. Also on the national front, this Clinton collusion with the Russians under Uranium One really taking on a lot of momentum. There's an interesting corollary to this that some of the uranium locations were under land in the West that may correspond with some of the abuse of the ranchers in the West. Now, this was called by Readout News a while back, and there's a lot more coming into the light on this issue. I think when it's done, we're going to be shocked and stunned at the level of collusion that will be revealed. Also on the national front, Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, assaulted, 5 broken ribs by his Democrat next door neighbor, who, by the way, he has no idea why he attacked him. At least that's what one of Rand Paul's friends leaked out to the media today. You notice this trend of violence coming from the left? Interesting, isn't it? And again, the leftist ideology of communism, the deadliest ideology, bar none, but not even close to anything else. You could take all the Crusades, you could take the Inquisition, you could take all that stuff, and not getting into who is justified doing what. You just take it all, put it on the table. It would not even compare. Not even compare to the millions and millions and millions and millions killed by communist dictators and their followers. Also on the regional front, the Bundy Ranch trial has begun. Sherry DeVale and Readout News is down there right now covering it. And we are going to be waiting to see how this shakes out. But I think a lot of people have come to the understanding that the government totally mishandled the situation. And especially when, you know, the agent in charge, Dan Love, has been under such scrutiny, been investigated, all these things have happened to him. I think that I think we're seeing a change. I think we're seeing a change in America. And by the way, down at Mall here, you never saw one of those guys fire, burn a building down. Ever. Just didn't happen. Why? Because they were respecting the buildings that were there. And you didn't see them running in the streets trying to punch people out. So I think the mainstream media needs to be doing some better coverage of what a truly peaceful protest is. Also on the local front, let's talk about the elections here in Spokane Valley and Spokane County. I want to go through a few of these things right now. If you have not turned your ballot in, get down there and turn your ballot in. It's really easy. I mean, it came to you in the mail, piece of cake. So if you want to take a look at my recommendations, you can always go to VoteShea.com, take a look at solutions, click down. You'll see Matt's take on elections. And it's always up there. I do this every election cycle. So, you know, maybe next year, if you can just remember to do it, you don't have to have it emailed to you or something, it's a lot easier. But there are some key contested races in the Spokane Valley area, and I want to go through them position by position, talk about it. But the bottom line is that right now, you have a group of socialists running against the existing city council in Spokane Valley. These are, and if this isn't, look, this is not hyperbole. Some have been linked to Indivisible and the local socialist movement. And if that's not enough, all of these people have been endorsed by the Progressive Voter Guide. Literally, that's what it's called. It's progressivevoterguide.com. You want to see what the who to not vote for? There it is. Published by the socialist organization Fuse Washington. I mean, these are admitted socialists, okay? So that makes things really clear. Let's keep Seattle socialism out of Spokane Valley. Let's start first with Spokane Valley City Council, position 1. Mayor Rod Higgins is up. He's largely responsible for saving $16 million in project costs on the Barker Road, among a myriad of other things, including bringing jobs out to the Spokane Valley Industrial Park. And he is running against, apparently, the heir of a longtime Spokane Valley Democrat matriarch. So, I mean, very clear links to the Democrat Party, no matter what anybody else tries to say, very clear links. And again, endorsed by the Progressive Voter Guide. Spokane Valley City Council position 2, Caleb Collier. Caleb's the guy that led the charge when the attorney general came forward and said, hey, we're going to ban so-called assault weapons. Caleb came forward with a great idea to do a Second Amendment sanctuary city. In other words, we're going to protect the right to bear arms here in Spokane Valley. Interestingly, his opponent got a zero, okay? I want to say that again, a zero on the We Believe We Vote guide. A zero. I don't even know what to say about that other than if you get a zero on the We Believe We Vote guide, you do not adhere to a Christian worldview, period. End of story. We're done. Caleb Collier does. Great Bible-believing Christian, great constitutional patriot. Spokane Valley City Council, position 4, Ed Pace. Now, Ed is a staunch social conservative. He's also led the charge on parental rights to be protected in Spokane Valley, and he is one of the great reasons we have not had property taxes raised in Spokane Valley in years. Even though it can be an automatic increase, they have actually voted against the automatic increase. Now, by contrast, his opponent is the one that lobbied for the 12-cent gas tax increase, making us the second highest gas tax in the country. And also a guy that runs a left-leaning newspaper. Now, that is a very stark contrast. A social conservative who is also a fiscal conservative, not just in words but in action, versus somebody who is clearly not a fiscal conservative. Also, Spokane Valley City Council, position 5, Pam Haley. Now, Pam Haley is not just a businesswoman, but she's also one of the people that was behind getting some of the companies to move to the Spokane Valley Industrial Park. Really great to have somebody with that kind of business acumen in office. Her opponent is a pro-choice, again, progressive. All these people endorsed by the Progressive Voter Guide. Fuse Washington. You want to know an organization to watch out for? Fuse Washington. That is the action arm of the left. Also, Spokane Valley City Council position 7, Mike Munch. Mike Munch is not just a Christian conservative. He's also the winner of the Defender of Liberty Award this year at our annual dinner we have. And he also helped to create and coordinate Spokane Valley's preparedness plan. So after the lights went out, you know, 250,000 people were without power, it was Mike Munch who led the charge to coordinate something that should have existed previously. And Mike's opponent is a longtime Democrat who has run as a Democrat in several other races. So there you go. Cut and dried, crystal clear. Going to move down next to the key ballot measures and talk about those very briefly. Advisory vote number 16, that is a tax increase on commercial fishing. Obviously, I would vote repealed. That's what I think people should do. You know, I don't think taxes need to be increased until we actually start cutting the size and scope of government. And in fact, even then, you won't need to increase taxes because the economy will increase dramatically and revenue will grow just by the sake of the economy growing. And that's the way to grow an economy. That's the way to make sure the government is keeping up in its budget with the actual number of people. But you have to cut the size of it dramatically. Also, advisory vote number 17. Again, a vote repeal a new bottled water tax and internet sales tax. Like, we need those, right? Advisory vote number 18. Hey, guess what? It's another tax increase. This time a $12.9 billion with a B, property tax increase, vote repeal. That's what I'm recommending. Proposition 2 in the city of Spokane, this is the one everybody's advocating to vote no. I think even the Socialist Review doesn't like this one. And one of the reasons is because it's clearly illegal and unconstitutional, and they're still running it. And it, in effect, would ban oil and coal trains, which they can't. They can't do that. So I think that it's pretty clear this election cycle, this is really for maintaining constitutional Christian conservatism in this area. And also tonight there is going to be an election celebration at La Bella V about 7 o'clock. If you want to stop by and say hi to some of the great conservative candidates in Spokane Valley, you can do that. La Bella V Event Center out there right near Barker and Appaway. You can't miss it. There's a huge sign there, and some of the candidates will be there. You can drop by and say hello. It's going to start, I think, about 7 o'clock. Some people will probably be there a little early because the election results don't usually come until about 8. So that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us, and I really appreciate that. Victoria was down helping with a great organization down in California that sends missionaries all over the world. They do just wonderful, wonderful work, even in Africa, just some of the most out-of-way places in the whole world. And we really appreciate your prayers. And if you get a chance to go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family. Tune them in to Patriot Radio. And remember, we have a podcast too on podbean.com. You can also go to iTunes. We have the podcast there as well. And if you want to support the show, you can go to VoteShea.com. And that brings me to our guest today. Now, we have been talking for quite a while about electromagnetic pulses, about the idea that this is an actual threat. And if not just electromagnetic pulses, you also have the threat of hackers being able to turn off the grid that was borne out here over the summer as legitimate. A lot of people said that could never be done, and it was achieved to the point where they could have literally turned on and off the lights at will. And so I think it's important now to kind of take the other side and bring somebody on, Jeffrey Yago, who is a licensed professional engineer and a certified energy professional with more than 40 years professional experience working on energy and emergency power grid field type stuff. He's also a regular contributor to Backwoods Home Magazine and Mother Earth News. Jeff, thanks for being on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Well, if you could tell a little bit about kind of how you came to make this, you know, really kind of the center point of your life, and why you think it's so important that people need to be energy independent, and not just, I'm not just talking communities, but individually as well.
Well, I know for me as a kid, I grew up in Texas, and of course we had a number of hurricanes there. I certainly remember as a teenager having to evacuate multiple times and sleeping on a school desk somewhere for days. So I had an early exposure to having to evacuate when there's storms and power outages. And I had an aunt growing up who had a gigantic pantry, which amazed me. I always thought that anytime she needed something, she would head into the pantry. And for me as a kid, it was like a grocery store. So that was kind of childhood directions pointing me this way. And then as I said, I've spent most of my engineering life working on all types of solar projects and backup power systems at residential, commercial, military. Been on a lot of secret military bases working on backup power systems, and finally realized as I approach retirement age that all of these systems are typically very expensive and usually very complicated. And I just got to thinking there's got to be a simpler solution for folks who are, you know, maybe not have the budget to buy a large solar system that a contractor comes in and installs. And just, you know, they need something simple. And so I started researching everything you could possibly get that's battery powered, and have with my current book, Lights On, I describe how you can do almost anything in your house normally with that you would use AC appliances. You can find substitute appliances that are battery-powered that will keep you going.
Well, let's talk a little bit first about, I mean, you know, in your professional experience, how vulnerable is the grid to being hacked? How vulnerable is it to being shut down for periods of time? Because I think a lot of people hear conflicting viewpoints on this, so I'd like to hear yours.
Well, certainly it's a concern, a real concern for me. I have a lot of clients. I have clients that actually are with Homeland Security and FEMA and places like that. I'm in Virginia, so I'm only 90 miles from D.C., so it's yeah, I do have concerns. And from them, I hear their concerns, too. And actually, the grid is more vulnerable now than it's ever been. I mean, most of us have grown up with a very reliable grid, electrical grid system, and it has been reliable. But in today's world, there's a number of issues to think about. First of all of your, a large majority of your electrical grid was installed in the 1960s, and this equipment is just plain getting old. When they deregulated the electric industry and did a number of things to break up from where the people that operate the transmission lines versus the power plants are now separately owned, all these cross-country power lines, they're aging, and there's not very many of them are being replaced, and of course, as the country expands its power demands, those power lines are not being upgraded or increased in capacity either. So that's one issue, is just the age of equipment. The second issue is hacking. We can talk about that in a little bit more detail and get into SCADA controls and why that's a real concern to me is the hacking of the control systems, and that's already been done in several cases. And then we have sabotage. There's a lot of recent attempts of sabotage of substations. There's been a lot of this going on right now, and it's just not making the news, or it's being pretty much kept out of the public eye. But you know, there's three issues, and of course the big one is EMP, the potential risk with countries like North Korea having capabilities that can generate an EMP weapon fairly easily, and we know they have that technology now. We know China has it, Russia has it, and, of course, the United States has it. It's just up to now nobody has used it yet. But, you know, something like that has a capability of pretty much shutting the grid down completely over at least half the country. So there's four issues that the grid faces today that it really didn't face years ago, and that's why I'm very concerned. I'm trying to get folks to at least make some simple preparations for power outages. And when I say power outages today, I'm talking about a grid down event, which by my definition would be an outage of months, not days, and long after your generator, if you have one, has run out of fuel or has died. So I'm worried about really long-term power outages that these different types of threats can cause.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, because I think people are getting more aware of the EMP threat. So let's talk instead about the sabotage toward substations that has occurred, and also some of the issues with the digitalization of most of our grid.
Okay. Well, of course, probably the most well-known one was the Medcalf Power Substation in San Jose, California. That happened in, I think, around 2013. That substation had 17 transformers were shot up. It had completely surrounded by security fencing, had security cameras. Yet this was reported as some kids vandalizing the substation, and of course everybody went back to sleep. But in reality, when they did further investigation, it was clear that multiple shooters were involved. They knew where to position themselves to have clear shots without being seen in the cameras. There was nobody was seen in the video feeds later. They knew what communication lines to cut first, which were in underground access tunnels, which they knew where to go for that and take care of that. And then finally, they found over 100 high-powered shell casings on the ground with no fingerprints. So And of course, it was done in the middle of the night. So we're talking about sharpshooters being able to target the cooling fins of these transformers. And these things are full of oil for cooling them. And so they didn't just shoot at a great big box. They were shooting at the smaller radiators on the side of the transformers so that once they would get holes in the radiators, like a radiator in your car, they would start leaking out the oil and gave them plenty of time to get out of Dodge, and then within an hour or so, the transformers leaked all the oil out and they melted down. So this was all reported as teenage vandalism, and since that time, there's been numerous other attacks of substations, of high-tension power lines, of power plants having vandalism and sabotage. So there's a lot of this has been going on in the past couple of years, and it's just not being reported.
Let's talk then also about the hacking that has occurred. I mean, this has been vindicated. You know, there's some people that brought this thread up here a couple of years ago, but they were poo-pooed about it. This summer, in late August and in early September, it was revealed by two separate sources, Symantec and another prominent cybersecurity firm, that indeed power companies were targeted. The grid was accessed, and to the extent they could have shut off the grid. Explain how that could possibly happen. Explain what SCADA is and why people should actually take this threat seriously.
Well, it is serious, and the real truth is I'm convinced that most of the utility grid systems have already been hacked. It's just that the methods used was to position dormant software into their control systems that will, and they're kind of sitting there waiting for either a date or a command to trigger them. But there, for example, in a couple years ago in Ohio, this happened in 2003. There was a power system there, a grid operator that for Ohio, they had a normal problem with some power lines touching each other in high winds and causing a short. And normally, a operator would just transfer the power over to another set of power lines. But there was a fault in the software, and the software did not allow the operators to see any alarms. And so, it was a simple problem to resolve. The operators are sitting there blind to the problem, and this ended up cascading down to 256 power stations and pretty much shut down power on the East Coast for up to 4 days in some areas. So the controls of power plants today are highly automated. They use computers that constantly monitor their loads, switch loads around from one power plant to another, from one set of lines to another. And my concern, I know everybody's talking about shutting the grid down, but that's really not my concern. My concern is if they can take over control of the grid, which they've already shown they can do. It's been done in other countries. They can do things to not only destroy these large transformers, but they can also destroy all of the large appliances and motors and things in industry by quickly turning the power on and off multiple times, so they can switch from one plant to another out of phase, single phasing. There's a lot of things they can do to really damage. You're talking about large motors and elevators to dams to industrial processing. All of these things can, it's not just a loss of power. I think they can, before they shut it down, they can destroy a lot of our appliances and equipment, regardless of where it's located. So that's has been demonstrated already that they can hack into these systems. Now, you mentioned SCADA, and SCADA is SCADA has one problem, and that is it's very good. It was developed back in the 1980s and went into widespread use in the 1990s. It's just simply it's a control program for industrial processes is all it is. But the thing is, it's so well designed, it's so robust that a lot of that equipment was put in years ago is still working just fine. And this was all done before the internet and before cell phone technology. So as companies and systems became more sophisticated, and people wanted to be able to remote control things that used to be hardwired. For example, when SCADA was developed, you might have it operating, say, a valve, and you have a temperature sensor that's wired to the valve, and it opens and closes the valve based on temperature. Well, nowadays, these systems have been interconnected from multiple plants to multiple substations to different locations, and the SCADA doesn't have any security built into it. It wasn't designed for that. It was designed to be a very simple, elegant solution to control mechanical systems remotely. So now what we have is all the SCADA equipment, and it's very susceptible to being hacked. There's even software programs people can get on fairly easily that will go out and search throughout the internet for any connected SCADA control systems. And these are used in water treatment plants, electrical distribution centers, sewage treatment plants, the controls for elevators, controls for heating and cooling systems, control of railroads. Everything these days use the same SCADA controls. And the biggie was Al-Qaeda. One of the Al-Qaeda centers was captured by Americans a few years back. They found programming manuals for SCADA equipment over there. So, this is clearly a vulnerability that we don't seem to be taking seriously.
And, yeah, the fact that this stuff was found in their hands, I mean, that should give alarm to everybody, but not in a sense of panic, but in a sense of, okay, now what do we do about it? And that's a great segue. Jeff, what do we do to become energy independent on the individual level?
Well, I think for, like I said, the reason I wrote the book is I've probably been through all the solutions that involve a whole lot of money and a whole lot of complexity. And my purpose with Lights On Book is to show people in a very simple way, and there's nothing technical about the book at all. It's written for a homeowner. It's written for somebody who's not an electrician or an engineer. And each chapter takes a different subject of your home. For example, I have a chapter on lighting. I have a chapter on the refrigeration and one on, medical devices that you may have and entertainment equipment and audio-video equipment and communications. And each chapter describes, for example, not how to power your existing refrigerator for indefinitely. Long-term, you may not have anything to put in a refrigerator anyway. So I'm dealing in long-term outages, not something last a couple of days. I certainly encourage folks to have a generator if they can, but a generator to me is a very short-term solution. I'm dealing with, we're going to be facing the potential of outages lasting months, not days. And in that regard, I'm not trying to power your existing home or your existing appliances. I'm saying let's find a battery-powered device that does the same thing. And the advantage with battery-powered equipment is you can keep them charged up with the grid if it's working, with the generator if you have it. You can plug it into your car outlet to charge it up. You can plug it into a little solar module to charge it up. There's numerous ways you can keep battery-powered equipment charged up. And the second advantage of battery-powered equipment is that, an AC appliance, even if it's Energy Star rated, is still not very efficient for an off-grid long-term situation. And if any of you ever bought a camera or something 10 years ago that was battery powered, those things would eat batteries. Well, today you can buy, with the difference in battery technology today, you can pick up a little camera and you can take hundreds of pictures before you need to recharge them. So it's not only some really cool battery powered devices you can get now, but the battery technology today is so far removed from what we grew up with, say the NiCad batteries and things of that nature. Today's battery technology is really great. I mean, you can charge up batteries today, and they can hold their charge for 9 months. So it's just a different world. And my book is to try to make people aware of this technology and how to use it, and And there's nothing in there that's expensive. And the great thing is, if you bought every single product I recommend in the book, and again, I'm not selling any products. It's only the book that I have. But I do recommend products in the book that I have tried and recommend, and I have an appendix, a list of where people can buy these different devices. But if you bought everything I recommend in the book, you could probably fit it all in two small suitcases, and that means you could bug it out. You could take it with you if you did have to evacuate. And so unlike, a whole house solar system or a large generator, if you had to evacuate, that's left behind. Well, everything I recommend you can take with you.
And that's extremely important, that portability aspect of it. And again, people that are on a budget can afford this, right? It's not super complicated or super expensive.
I'd say the majority of devices that I am recommending are in the $30 to $50 range. There's a few items, maybe $150. I talk about things like alternate ways to have water, pumping water if you're on a well system. And, of course, if you lose the grid and generator, most well pumps are not going to work. I have a whole chapter on alternate ways to have clean water. Same thing on medical devices. A lot of people have CPAP machines and things that they depend on working every night. Well, if the grid's down for 2 months, what are you going to do? Same thing if you have medicines that you need to keep refrigerated. I have alternate ways to cool those without, trying to keep a large residential refrigerator operating. So the whole idea is simple, low-cost ways. And, of course, if one of these devices fails, all the rest of them still work. And that's not what you would have with a generator or a large solar system. If a whole house solar system would fail, you'd lose everything. And, of course, I live in a solar home, so I'm speaking from experience. So, the whole purpose of the book is simple, low-cost ways the average homeowner can have some preparation for a long-term power outage. I really think we're going to be facing that in the near future.
Well, Jeff, if you could, tell people if they want, where they can go if they want to get more information, both on your website and also plug your book one more time.
Thank you for the chance. the book is Lights On. It's kind of my answer to Ted Koppel's Lights Off. I do recommend his book also, but, his is a good one to read first to tell you the risks, but his doesn't have any real solutions. So I say read the Lights Off book first and then read Lights On book, and I've got solutions for you. You can get it at Amazon, of course. WorldNet Daily is another good location for it. WorldNet Daily is the publisher of the book. It's on their bookstore. I'm easy to find online. Just Google my name. It's just Jeff Yago. It's spelled Y-A-G-O. I write for numerous magazines on solar and alternate power systems, so all of these articles are available online that you can download for free. And my website is offgridprepper.com.
Well, Jeff, in the last minute that we have or so, if you could, can I give a message to the folks out there? Say, maybe I can wait. Maybe this is just not that big of a deal. And especially the young folks that might be those kind of procrastinators.
Well, I think if they just go back what I said, it's different now. We are not at all in a situation we were up until now. We've had good reliability of the grid, but things are changing. And the risks, for example, from North Korea is certainly in the news every day as a potential threat. But any of these things that are going to happen in the future, they're not going to be power outages lasting days. It's going to be months. And people need to start thinking about that. And I know people are on a budget and don't have a lot of money, and a lot of people live in apartments and condos and don't have a lot of space. Well, everything in this book you can do, even if you live in an apartment. And if nothing else, get a flashlight. I'm amazed that most people don't even own a flashlight, and the ones that own a flashlight, they can't find it. And if they can find it, it doesn't have any batteries in it because the kids took them out for the toy. So I'm just, please, these are inexpensive things. You will really, really, they're going to be very handy and a necessity for a large part of this country when we are faced with a grid down situation. I'll tell you, the government just cannot possibly handle that many millions of people with food, water, shelter. It's just not possible. You're going to be on your own. And in my book, I have a whole chapter at the beginning describing what's happened in the past and how quickly things have deteriorated when the power was out in other states and other cities. So we start out with what can happen in real life, what's happened, and then we go into the solutions.
And I'm actually reading it right now, so I really appreciate all the time you've taken and the care you've taken in putting that book in simple terms, because I tell you right now, if a lawyer can understand it, I think anybody can understand it. You know what I mean?
Well, so, I have another book coming out in the spring. It's going to be a simplified explanation of EMP. I do have a chapter in my book on EMP, but it's a fairly short chapter. I've spent a lot of time meeting with scientists in this field and testing with real EMP chambers, a lot of equipment that you read on the internet that's going to fail, and I found a lot of it doesn't fail, and I found a lot of it that they say is not going to fail will fail. So I'm going to make a real simplified layman's version of what is EMP and what do I need to do about it.
Well, we'll have you back on then as well. Jeff Yeago, author of Lights On, offgridprepper.com. Thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Really appreciate everything you're doing out there. And we always have room for you here in the American Readout if you want to move out of Washington, D.C., or at least close proximity, all right?
I've been there. I don't like all the rain.
All right. Well, we don't have a lot of rain over on the east side, so just consider it. All right.
Thanks again.
Well, this is Matt Shea. Once again, thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Make sure you turn your ballots in today. It's Election Day. Get down there and do it. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one. Join us at La Bella V, 7 o'clock, too. Bye.